75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome to the UFO Files, and we're getting ready to go to Laughlin, Nevada for the UFO Congress. Larry, Dick, and I was hoping you could go this year, but there's always other conferences later. And in fact, I understand there may be one on the East Coast that's going to be pretty big later. How are you, by the way?
I'm very good. How are you, Jerry?
Okay.
There have been rumors floating around about something might happen back here. This summer or fall. I'm not quite sure what the plans are, but people are talking about it. And, you know, I sort of spread the word amongst certain people here in the New York area that it would be a good idea to do something like that. And I do hope that people follow up on that, because I think it would be great to have a big UFO conference right here in the New York metropolitan area.
Well, you know, Nancy and Bill of UFO Magazine fame have moved back to New Jersey, even though they still have their boat. I think it's out in the bay of Southern California, in L.A., at the Marina del Rey.
Yeah, that's where they are right now, as a matter of fact. A little bi-coastalism there, but Nancy really wants to come back here and settle in. She really loves her new home in Lambertville, New Jersey.
Well, you have an interesting column coming out in March, so people need to look for that. In UFO Magazine, Fera Yudoza also has writings in there, and so does Larry Bryant.
Right.
And Rick Trotman.
Right. Is there anybody else that we can include? Sounds like the whole staff there, huh?
And occasionally you let me write a column for you and take your place for a month, so I guess we're all involved.
Right.
A lot of things happening besides the UFO Congress, and we do have lots of shows that'll be really rolling out here this week, toward the middle of the week, getting ready to go to Laughlin. And our plan is, hopefully, to get a new show up every day that we're in Laughlin. And so that's kind of what we're operating on. We hope we can do that. And,
right.
We have enough tape and enough programs, and I have a really jam-packed schedule while I'm there. So I would say we'd have Laughlin shows for at least a month. Almost every other day or every day.
Well, that's one reason, you know, that perhaps it's not a good idea for me to go. I'm always looking for that excuse. Somebody has to take care of our website. That's a big job.
That's true, and we have it figured out how we're going to pull it off, and we'll see if it works.
Right.
We have some other shows coming up, too. You know, Aztec, we're going this year. For the first time that I've been to Aztec. I've been up there before, but not for the conference.
Right.
And Fera Yudoza is she's actually lecturing.
Right.
On Turkish UFOs. By that I mean not UFOs from Turkey, sightings.
Right. And Turkish ETs, right.
And then we have the Ozark Festival coming right up after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's festival month.
Right. Springtime is always a big time for UFO events.
And now this year we have something another thing that's pushing us to do a lot of shows on, and we have at least three of those prepared. And that's the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And we have Dr. Lynn Keepjai's DVD on sale on our website if people would like to go over to shopjerrypippin.com if they really want to see an interesting DVD This is one that won the awards there at the film festival in Laughlin, I think a couple of years ago.
Right.
And so that's big, and that's coming up on the 17th of March, and they have all kinds of anniversaries going on, and already they're having sightings.
Yeah. That sighting event occurred on Tuesday, February the 6th. They had a new sighting out there in Phoenix that was very reminiscent of the 1997 and 98 sightings, and especially the 97. You know, with the lights close to South Mountain. I think we had a link to that video out there on our UFO Files page, and if we don't, I'll certainly make sure that we have one out there. It is very interesting in that you can see four very bright lights, and then occasionally one or two others appear and seem to sort of maneuver around the four big bright lights and then disappear. And Rich Giordano has done some work on that sighting, and he's analyzed the video, and he has a write-up, and you can actually see a copy of the video out there on his site. And I'll have a link to that. And Rich and I had a little short conversation about this sighting, and I concluded is that it seems that there's something strange going on there, and Rich actually promotes the idea that there were these bright objects that were down by South Mountain, but also the Army indicated that they were conducting an exercise at the Goldwater facility down there south of Phoenix, and you know, it's basically a testing range. They'll go in there and you know, do exercises where Army people will set up something and the Air Force will come in and attack and you know, simulate some kind of combat situations, and they claim they use flares frequently in these exercises that are frequently conducted at night, conveniently. Rich says that on the video that he has is that you can see the big bright lights down by South Mountain, but also is that you know, it's not like there's a continuous string of mountains. You can at some
string of lights.
Well, I'm talking about the mountain range itself. Is yeah. That it isn't like covering completely the horizon, and you can see you know, see further south at some points along that range of mountains, and therefore you can see further south. And he says you can actually see what the military was talking about, with little flares dropping very far away, nowhere near South Mountain. And you've got to realize that you're talking about the Goldwater Range is not right next door to the Phoenix city limits. It's a good distance south. So these lights are very large and bright, and would appear to be much closer than the Goldwater Range. They still, the military is still insisting that they had that exercise at night. And the thing is they made a big media story supporting that. And they claim that there were F-16s from Luke Air Force Base, which is on the western side of Phoenix. They claim that they were sent down there that night to participate in the exercise. Well, the media called up Luke Air Force Base, and the public relations officer there didn't know anything at all about an exercise being held, which was quite interesting.
You know, lots of strange things happen in Phoenix in connection with Luke Air Force Base, and also there's a military facility down at Tucson.
Right, which is where that exercise was. That was where the base of operations was in Tucson.
And then you have all of the Phoenix Lights, the stories. In fact, there's another event happening in Phoenix on the 21st, Wednesday night. The HD widescreen premiere of Fast Walkers, the documentary that we've been pushing and helping Robert Miles sell. And they got a big event there on Wednesday night.
Right.
You'd have to go check his website and to see exactly where it is, but it's also in the paper down in Phoenix, so if you're in that area.
Well, we have it. We have it on our site. If you go to the sales and promo page there, just click on the big banner for Fast Walkers, and down at the bottom of that page, there is a notice about where this is being held, how to get tickets, etc.
Good. That's that we got that covered.
Right. And speaking of Wednesday night, just happens to be this original. New Phoenix Lights sighting was on a Tuesday night. Part of the media promotion that this was indeed a military operation is the people that were talking to the media who were out of Tucson. As we mentioned, they said the jets were sent down there from Luke Air Force Base. And at the end of the commentary, they stated, "And we'll prove to you all that indeed these were flares, because on Wednesday night we're having another operation and we're going to drop more flares. So wait and see."
I don't think anything happened.
You are absolutely right. Wednesday night came, everybody went outside to look, and nothing happened. And I said, well, you know, is this mass confusion on the government's part? They can't get their stories straight, or is this some kind of a psyops operation to drive people nuts?
Well, we have quite a few other things we need to cover here, and you've got some interesting things to talk about, as you always do, Larry. So I guess we better continue along with the show. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, we're going to talk about interesting developments from China. Here's a report, and incidentally, this isn't just in China. There was another report that came out that, along with the Chinese, the Chilean government down in South America has now come out stating that they support the fact that UFOs exist, and they have their military and scientific community looking into the matter. So they're joining in with the Brazilians, who made their announcement last year. So things, more and more countries seem to be coming out saying UFOs are real.
You know, Dr. Alfred Weber's on a tour of the world, really, and I was noticing an email from him yesterday or day before, in which he was forwarding something from an Indian correspondent.
The Indian government is very much into UFO research, absolutely.
So, everybody but the U.S.
Yeah, we're still saying they don't exist. And we're not doing anything, and we're not paying any attention to anything, which is quite obviously quite different from reality. We get reports all the time of F-15s and F-16s chasing UFOs.
Yeah, now you might expand a little bit on that Chinese communique.
Right.
They basically, I detected a lot of suspicion from them about what we're doing. You know, in other words, we believe they're real, and we're trying to find out, and we believe maybe somebody knows more than they know. I'm paraphrasing, of course.
Yeah, well, basically, there's a little propaganda stuff going on here is they're having an opportunity to hear to state that the Chinese government recognizes the reality of UFOs. They're condoning official research, but this also indicates that they don't really know what the real story is, but they think perhaps somebody over here keeping a secret from the American people are really keeping a secret from the world. And that indeed we know more than they do, and but they're going to go ahead and do their own research, and they believe UFOs are real. They believe that ETs are real. They even go so far as to say that there's a good possibility that ETs may already be living amongst us, and they look forward to the fact that the kind of technology that ETs have might be eventually shared with humanity. And we're talking about, you know, the drive mechanism for UFOs and the fact that there's a potential there, you know, to really revolutionize transportation here on the planet and elsewhere. And the stuff about zero point energy came up. You know, it sort of sounds like people in this country are certainly beating the drums on, you know, free energy resources gained from ET technology. And the fact that somebody's got that information and it should be spread out to the rest of the world, and basically the Chinese government has gotten on the bandwagon there and saying that's what we think too.
China, you know, is going to have a lot of energy needs as everyone begins to buy cars over there. And they're well aware of the shortage of this fossil fuel-based things that we use for cars. And so who knows what will develop out of there. I find it interesting. It's not connected with UFOs, but Daimler this week said they're going to get rid of Chrysler, more or less. And China is very interested in Chrysler and getting into this market. So maybe the Chrysler with the Chinese government running it might be a water-based fuel component. You never know.
Well, all sorts of things are possible, Jerry.
So, I mean, there's lots of things that are impacted in the social, economical, political world that do have a basis with what we talk about on these shows with UFO files,
right,
sightings and technology, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
What else do we have today, this week, before we get to some of Fiverr's sightings? I know we have some sightings of our own to talk about.
Yeah, we have several reports that we're going to be talking about, people that we've dealt with in the past and people that we have just begun communicating with recently on sightings. Some really interesting stuff. I got a message this week from Paul Sheehy up in the Toronto area of Canada, and he was interviewed last week by Brian Vike, our friend Brian up in British Columbia, and Brian has his own radio show that he does on a Canadian network up in the northwest part of the country, and I don't know that they have affiliates back in eastern Canada, but they may. So potentially he's heard all over Canada on this program that he does each week. And on this particular program, that was on the 12th of February, he interviewed Paul rather extensively, and Paul talks about all the sightings that he had starting back in 1967 and going forward, of which the 1977 sighting, he spent quite a bit of time on that and provides a lot of detail, and including a drawing of what the UFO looked like, which as I have mentioned before on the program and also in my UFO magazine article, I think, that came out in February. They come in all shapes and sizes, and this is really really quite different from most of the reports in terms of the shape of the object. So we have that report with Brian, an audio report, posted out on Paul's page, and there will be a link there adjacent to our report, or you can get over to the page where that interview is.
And while they're there, they can listen to the interview we did with Paul, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yes, and gets into a lot more than just his sightings per se. You know, you got two programs there with Paul, and I think that you'll find both of them quite interesting. Next, I want to talk about a sighting that we discussed, I believe, on our last show from young lady in Minden, Illinois. This sighting involved the young girl and her two male cousins.
They're very young.
Yeah, she's 12 years old.
Yeah.
And quite intelligent. And I spoke with her mother, and actually the mother was the person who initially had the sighting of the UFO. And then she, you know, once she got over being sort of frozen in place watching this event, she ran inside and got the kids and brought them outside, and they had a video camera, and they attempted to get pictures of what they were all seeing, we have this video that they sent to me that we're going to post out there so that you can take a look at it for yourself. And not only is it an attempt to catch a UFO on video, which isn't easy, especially if you're a young kid, 12 years old or thereabouts, and you don't have a tripod and you're trying to aim at this thing that's across the road from where you're living, and everybody's excited, a little hard to get a good picture. I'm going to try to get a still frame out of this video that actually shows the object. Of course, it is in motion.
Well, I kind of like the way she puts the video together. I'm talking about the 12-year-old. She may be another Katie Couric.
If nothing else, I think she potentially can be another Carrie Cassidy. You know, Carrie does videos that we post on her site along with Bill Ryan. And this young lady, I think she's been watching Carrie's videos and saying, I can do that too, because she interviews one of her cousins, and it's a real fun interview. They talk about the sighting itself, and then they talk about ETs.
Is there a scrapbook or something?
Yeah, she has a scrapbook of a bunch of pictures and whatnot that she's got out of magazines and whatnot, showing.
Her taste in ETs are somewhat like mine, a little gory.
Yeah, she's got got a few pictures of autopsies and whatnot, but I tell you, the young lady is very bright, and her mother should be very proud of her, because she did a great job on this video. She did it herself. And so at any rate, I'm going to just go through the sighting itself. The mother wrote a little report to me. And incidentally, the mother's name is Teresa. And this
Mother Teresa.
Right. this is what she has to say. I know we talked about this report in the last show, but just refresh your memory before you watch the video. This is what happened, in the mother's words. I went outside that evening to make sure our dogs had plenty of water. I couldn't help but notice a light in the sky. Across the road above our neighbor's field, where he had his cattle, interesting, little note there, UFOs and cattle here. There was a light that was going in a circle. It moved above the neighbor's house, all the while going in circles, then began to move back above the field. Now, this field is right across the road from Teresa and Emily's house. Said I was finally able to pull myself away from watching it, and I ran into the house and told my daughter Emily, actually she has two daughters here, Emily and Katie, and my nephews Justin and Matt. They looked at it, and then Emily grabbed the camcorder and got a shot of it. P.S. When you watch the DVD, there are two scenes. The first scene shows the moon that was out that night, and the second scene shows the moon and then the UFO flashing by, and it does move extremely fast. I mean, you have to be paying attention to see this flash through the camera image. And as I said, I'm going to try to get a still shot, but it's still going to show a blur of light. But you can seem to see a shape in there, and it is not, I've looked at this myself, it is not the same shape as the moon. So definitely something going on there.
Emily or Katie, which one is the rising curiosity?
Emily. Okay. And Emily is the one that wrote us initially on our listener's input, where you can put in a message and send it to us, giving all the attributes of the sighting. And Emily did that initially on her own.
You know, speaking of Gary Cassidy and Bill Ryan a while ago, we are now making available for people who... Yeah, for one reason or another, can't download it from a computer. They can order those videos that Curie's done with several people from our shop, JerryPippin.com site.
Right. Yeah, we're going to be having all of her videos up there at some point. And the first one that's going to be offered is the Dan Burrish video.
We've been promised an interview of Dan Burrish. We'll find out. Ourselves. We do have an interview with him that Curie and Bill did already. And we're supposed to tape that on a Saturday afternoon.
Right. Well, that should be fun.
You're listening to the sightings report, the UFO files, Larry Dickin and Jerry Pippin here, and we'll get to some of the things that Filer has done, but you mentioned the fact that they can report it to us. We do have a form. You fill it out and we follow them up. We promise. And we'd really like to expand that and get more. And we are getting more sightings, really.
Right. Well, we have one that was just came in today, as a matter of fact, from a person that we have corresponded with over in the United Kingdom, a man by the name of Mal Pearson. And Mal has sent us a report that is one of these "when I was younger" reports. But it is quite interesting, and seems like Mal sort of put this in the back of his mind for a while and sort of, I think, wanted to forget about it. But he's come forward here tonight with a report about something that happened to him in 1974 when he was 21 years old.
Well, we now know how old he is.
Right. And he says this only came to light a few years ago. In other words, from the time he was 21, for a number of years, he just sort of filed this away and forgot about it. And as I said, I think he wanted to forget about it. It scared him. So at any rate, here's the report. I'm now 54 years old. About 8 years ago, I said to my dad, "There's a good program on Tuesday about UFOs." he said, don't talk to me about UFOs, not after the last one. And I asked, which one? Very confused and disbelieving. He said, you know, you were there. He told me about a flying saucer-shaped craft which hovered over a number of children, including my younger brother and sister, for a few minutes before zooming off into the distance. This happened in Hull, which is in England, around 1972 or 73, before I was married. Apparently, all the neighbors came out to see what the noise was. The kids were screaming and the dogs were going berserk. What is odd is that I don't remember coming through the kitchen and looking through an open back door and seeing the sky through the door. I remember seeing the shape of the craft on the top right-hand corner, and it was curved and shaped like the lower part of a Thunderbird II. Now, that's a car that they used to make. Ford used to make.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
I don't remember what it looks like, but I'll take his word.
Basically, like the original 55 Thunderbird.
Uh huh.
Only it was made on a Mustang frame, I think.
Right.
And it's a limited car. I mean, they didn't make a lot of them.
Right. Well, that made it pretty unique. I guess the UFO must have picked up a Thunderbird too on its travels. I remember.
And since he lives in England, and Ford expanded about that time into Europe, the European market's really big time, and I guess they offered that over there.
I guess so.
I don't know that they ever offered it here in the U.S.
I don't remember. No. Yeah. At any rate, he says, I remember thinking, well, at least they got the shape right. And then as I got outside, but that's nothing like a Thunderbird too, I had an urge to walk down the path a few feet towards the greenhouse on my own, and I still don't know why I did this. I also remember being extraordinarily frightened at the time, looking over to the right at this frightening thing, quote, and then looking to the left to the gable end of the house nearby, then looking back at the frightening thing and once again looking back at the gable end, which seemed safe. The gable end was where some years earlier there was a lightning strike which nearly knocked me off my feet. I was about 12 years old at the time, and it scared me to my very bones. He's lucky he wasn't killed. This thing scared me just the same, and I remember thinking lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place, but this isn't lightning. If anyone asked me, have you seen a UFO, I would and still would say no. But I can recognize that part of my mind has seen something so frightening that it couldn't handle it and made me forget. I asked my dad, what color was it? He says he can't be sure, but he saw windows with, this is on the craft, with people, quote, looking at us and smiling. Well, that's my two pennies worth. My dad does not play jokes. He's an ex-army guy and doesn't shy away from anything. Hence, he remembers. Wish I could say the same. Wish you all well. Kind regards, Mal Pearson.
Well, Mal, I hope you get more details why there was the fear. I mean, it seems to me like, Larry, something else happened. I wonder if the father would be willing to talk a little more.
I don't know. I got the impression the father saw what he saw, and he actually saw, you know, like this craft was close enough that he could look up, and he says, I saw windows, and there's people in there smiling at us. So he didn't seem to be scared.
No, that's what I said. It didn't seem to be a scary thing to him.
Right. But something else was happening on the ground, and I think I get the impression, he says, he walked down the path towards the greenhouse, so to speak. And he encountered something that was a, quote, frightening thing. I don't think that was the UFO. I think that was some, quote, ET, perhaps, there on the ground. And it scared the hell out of me.
Well, if the rest of it comes to you, let us know.
Right. Speaking of, would I ever say that I saw a UFO, I'd like to use that as a tagline to sort of promote this little 15-minute mini-documentary video that Carrie Cassidy put together. And this is her interviewing experience, the first one she did, actually, in the UFO community. And she did this at the...
At the Crash Retrieval Conference, I believe.
In 2005, in Las Vegas.
And I was there, but I don't remember. Carrie said that we talked. And Carrie's a good-looking woman, so that's kind of strange that I don't remember.
Well, that's sort of like the UFO and the frightening thing. You don't remember.
I was very busy and preoccupied at the time. We were doing not only UFO shows, but we were doing some other shows, too, in Las Vegas. And I was back and forth, so I could have just missed her.
Right.
Because I was in and out of there that year. Anyway, it's an interesting little piece of editing she put together, and actually very good.
Yeah, if you're looking to see, what UFO researchers think about UFOs and about government cover-ups and what's really going on, what the ETs might be up to, it's an extremely interesting look at ufology and UFOs and ETs, and I highly recommend it. I mean, people are laying it on the line, and surprisingly enough, a number of these researchers have never seen a UFO. Isn't that interesting?
Well, remember, I hadn't seen one until I did the Phoenix Light Show.
Right.
In Phoenix, and one flew out over the mountain peak.
Right. Well, I've only seen a few in my life, and I can count them on one hand, the fingers on one hand, the number of times that I've seen UFOs personally. There's even been reports of a few flying over my house while I've lived here, and certainly,
missed it.
Yeah, and I missed it. I was in here, and there's also numerous reports here in the New York area, right over Manhattan, etc. And I haven't seen any of those either, but a lot of other people have. So, it's something that maybe you don't see every day, but most people have at least one or two experiences in a lifetime. So it's interesting to see that, yes, there are people out there that have never seen one, but they're convinced that other people are seeing them and that they do exist.
Rick Trotman, we're going to do his a little bit here in a minute. I don't know if I remember correctly, but I thought he said he hadn't seen one. But then I think he sent me a description one time, but maybe it wasn't of him seeing it. Somebody else was. But he's very interested in UFOs.
Right. Well, someday, if he hasn't seen one, it's very likely in his lifetime that he will at least see one.
And I'm sure he'll straighten us out if he has seen one.
Right. And I can tell you, I got another email this week from our friend that's up in at Mount Adams.
Yeah, James Gilliam.
Right, and he's convinced that by the end of this year, we'll all be seeing lots of UFOs, because he maintains that, the great Mayan calendar date of 2012, December 21st, being the great change is going to come upon us. James says, no, that's going to happen this year. is
it? Yeah, he says it's a little off, and you say also it's a little earlier too, but not that early.
Yeah, my recall is that indeed there's some problems with translating the date from the Mayan calendar to our Gregorian calendar, and somebody made a mistake and made 2012 be the year, but in actuality some other people did a lot of research and came up with another number, but I don't recall it being 2007. I thought it was more like
2011 or something.
Right. You know, it was like less than a year off, but it was off.
Well, we have interviews with James on our website, and we actually did one with him in Laughlin while we're going this weekend, and James may be down there this weekend. I think he told me he might.
Right.
We'll follow it up with him if it's true, but James has seen lots of UFOs, and he's seen lots of ETs.
They seem to be, a lot of them taking up residence there at Mount Adams. He sees them all the time.
And there has been contact by James.
Right.
Or by them with James.
There's other people that go up there and visit with him. I mean, he basically has a bed and breakfast type setup there. And there's an awful lot of people that have gone up there and come back saying they definitely saw things. And these include people that work for some of the military contractors have been up there.
Yeah, for Boeing, for sure, and some others.
Right. So I got an interesting report here before we get to Rick's pick for the week and a little filer's information. I have a report that Bill Hamilton sent us, and this has to do with what he's doing right now and what he knows is going on about the Chicago O'Hare sighting.
The more I think about it, it's Bill Hamilton's fault because I don't remember Kerry Cassidy, because I was busy with Bill that time of that conference. We were working on a couple of stories.
Uh-huh.
And I just missed her, but at least we made the acquaintance later, and we're glad to have her as part of our family when we put all of her videos up. She does a good job.
Right. So this is what Bill sent to us this week. It is interesting because it indicates somebody's going to be doing some follow-up on the Chicago O'Hare sighting. We've been tracking this story since November the 20th when it was in the Weekly Filer's report for that week. He had picked it up from Peter Davenport, who had posted it on his site within a couple of days of the actual occurrence, which was on November 7th. So we've been tracking it a long time, and there's been a lot of extra stuff going on with purported photographs and one purported eyewitness, unfortunately, that stuff didn't pan out, and we have made an announcement, a public announcement, that if anybody in the Chicago area has seen anything, saw anything that day hovering over O'Hare Airport, and they have an eyewitness account, and or they have any photos or videos, please let us know. And of course, the Chicago Tribune put a similar statement out, both on their local TV station there in the Chicago area and also in print, that they're looking for videos and photos. To date, no one, absolutely no one, has responded to them. Certainly no one has responded to us, or we would have presented it to you all. And
I was hoping you said you were going to say that Bill Hamilton found the video.
No, he has not. Somebody out there in the community has reported they have a video. That remains to be seen, because they say they're not going to put it out for the public to see until next year.
Why would I have to? They're going to put it in a DVD and sell it.
All right. I'm not going to wait till next year. The story's going to be dead by then. But at any rate, this is what Bill has to say. UFOs are back in the news, especially sparked by the O'Hare Airport sighting and a new round of Phoenix Lights sightings, which, as before, are being dismissed as flares. MUFON has launched an investigation into the O'Hare sighting, which, from the excellent reports, looks like a true UFO event. Now, these are reports, of course, from United Airline personnel. Dr. Richard Haynes, director of NARCAP, which is this organization that basically takes airline employee reports and keeps them on file, and their main interests and the interests of Dr. Haynes has to date been protecting the safety of the public. He considers UFOs to be something that can be dangerous to airline traffic, and indeed they can if they get in the flight path and whatnot. Not good to have UFOs hovering over a major airport. A plane just might run into it. Of course, we know from many reports that UFOs seem to take every precaution in not running into airplanes, although sometimes they come very close. So the director of NARCAP started the investigation at the request of Peter Davenport. A Freedom of Information Act request have been filed by Dr. Haynes and the Chicago Tribune reporter John Hilkovich. The skeptics have been quick to jump on these sightings to come up with prosaic explanations. If that doesn't work, the poor observational abilities of pilots and aviation personnel are cited as a reason to disbelieve the reports, never mind the observational accuracy of ordinary witnesses. Makes one wonder if we should let these poor observers take us for a ride on our next plane trip. Both ARC skeptics Joe Nickel and James Oberg have jumped into the fray. I certainly am interested in this sighting report. The thing is, as we've mentioned before, it's strange that no one else out there in the Chicago area seems to want to come forward and talk about this with anybody. And is it the fact that no one else saw anything? I doubt it. I think that the media coverage has indicated that if you do come forward, you're going to have a lot of flack, and people are just not doing it.
You may have a point there. It's interesting, and there have been reports of many people standing around seeing this graph, so somebody's got a picture.
Right. One would think, yes, but, you know, there have been a few plied out there which turned out to be not valid pictures, that they were hoaxes. And, you know, so that makes it even worse. People are afraid, you know, I'm going to submit a picture, you're going to call it a hoax. So that didn't help either.
Well, that was probably by design.
Oh, I'm sure it was. By design of our friends down in the Washington area.
Okay, now, Rick Kroppen has something interesting.
Yeah, Rick comes in with some strange reports sometimes, and he says, here's another strange one for you, Larry. So I'll be quite honest, I haven't read it, so I might be surprised myself.
Okay, well, this is a first read.
Right.
Because I didn't read it either, because I thought you did.
Well, this sighting, interestingly enough, occurred on July 14th, 1999, and that happens to be my birthday, July 14th. It occurred at 4:30, I presume, in the afternoon. It was reported on the 9th of February 2003 to Peter Davenport's New Fork site, and the location was at Otter Lake, Canada, and this is in Quebec province. The duration was about 5 minutes. And here's the report. My girlfriend, her two children, a boy and a girl aged 6 and 7 years, and I were camping at an old abandoned lumber camp, which is about a 4-hour drive northwest of Ottawa. It's called the Osborne Depot. We were camped out at least 70 miles away from Otter Lake, the nearest town with phones and electricity.
That's out in the boonies.
That's in the boonies, yeah. Well, I've been out there, Canada, north of, you know, Toronto and going over to Montreal, up in that area. And, you know, it seems like it's fairly close, you know, to large cities and not that far away from the United States. But I tell you, you get out there in the middle of nowhere, you are really in the middle of the wilderness out there. There's nothing. So at any rate, no phones and no electricity. We had met a few fishermen on our way about 30 miles before we arrived at our destination. As far as we know, there was no one else near us. We loved being away from civilization. We were having a great time. We were really roughing it and enjoying being away from it all. No bright lights or noise for miles away. We were just taking a break from it all. The weather was beautiful. It was warm and clear with not a cloud in the sky. We swam and fished in the deep water of the John Bull Creek and gathered firewood for our second night. After putting the kids to sleep in the tent around 11:30 p.m., my girlfriend Gail and I returned to the campfire and sat together talking and just watching the fire. After a few hours, and now we're getting past midnight, so, you know, that time I gave you may have been 4:30 in the morning. After a few hours, we noticed just how clear a night it was, so we decided to move away from the fire in order to look at the stars. We walked to a nearby old bridge, which was about 30 feet from our tent, and looked towards the heavens. The sky was full of stars, galaxies, planets, with the occasional jet or satellite streaking across the sky in their usual slow rate. We knew morning was coming because in the east you could see the sky starting to brighten a bit. The loons were starting to sing, which was a sure sign of daybreak. In the early morning hours, just before daybreak, things started getting weird. I noticed a strange-looking light far off in the distance, unlike anything else I'd ever seen. It seemed to be zigzagging, so I pointed it out to Gail. It seemed very far away, but as we focused on it, we noticed that it was coming directly towards us. It seemed unbelievable that it would be heading straight for us. I even made a half-hearted joke to Gail about it being a UFO, but soon we realized that this was no joke. I never believed it possible, but as we watched, suddenly it was 200 to 300 feet away. It was large and super reflective, with lights all around its outer edge that changed colors from deep red to light yellow in a circular pattern. It also had this bright glowing ball on the center of its bottom. It made no noise. It lit the sky up around it. I put my hand to my face and could not believe my eyes. Myself and Gail were terrified. We were afraid to run, and by the size of it, running seemed pointless. Then we noticed on the right and left of the first ship there were two more. The sky was yellowish red, and you can see the outline of the trees that were behind it. We just sat there and looked at it, not really knowing what to do. So we did nothing. Next thing we know, they are gone, and it is no longer daybreak. The sky is dark again. The loons are no longer singing, and it is 1 a.m. again. And I say again only because I'm reading this for the first time. It's 1 a.m. again. We return to the tent and sit by the fire and try to figure out just what had happened. But for some unknown reason, we're not frightened, and we want to leave. So we decided to wait until morning. We finally started to drift off to sleep near the fire when we were suddenly awakened by a loud growl or hiss, and the ground trembled under us. I awoke, grabbed my shotgun, and took a shot into the darkness. Whatever it was gone. It made no noise leaving. It may have been a bear, but a bear makes noise when running into the deep woods. Needless to say, we left the Osborne Depot and the John Bull Creek, never to return again. We may never know what we saw or heard that night, but one thing I know is that there are more things out there than I will ever know or want to know.
Well, it's an interesting story because it's missing time retroactively. In other words, it went to dawn and then went back.
Either that or they went through almost a full 24-hour cycle.
Well, what about the kids, though? They would notice that they weren't there.
Yeah, unless the kids were gone, too.
Interesting point. We have only a minute or two left. We need to do something for Filer before we leave. And I'm sure you picked out a wonderful sightings report out of that group.
You are. Surprise. No, actually, I hadn't. But we can certainly talk about one or two short little reports here.
Yeah, we're running up against the clock, so be your own judge.
Right. Well, we have an interesting sighting here. We don't do too many from Alaska, so let's do that. This comes from Anchorage. The witness reports the disc was silver and very bright with lights that were very red, and it hovered over Lake Hood Elementary School on January the 28th, 2007. It was a very disturbing sight. Its lights were brighter than stars and stayed in the same spot for over 5 minutes before it flew away at about 100 miles per hour. There were many people there that night, and they were just as afraid as I was. That's a good indication that there were a lot of co-witnesses to this sighting.
Well, I think that was a good one because we were talking about the wildernesses of Canada, and now we went to the wildernesses of Alaska.
Well, Anchorage isn't quite a wilderness. Not too far from the wilderness, but people of Anchorage, I think, would prefer that we think of them as being in a city. I could have sworn I saw some sort of body or figure moving inside the craft. In other words, apparently this was close enough that one could see, quote, a window in the side of this thing, and they saw something moving around inside. It was a very dark night, and nothing could possibly be that bright, not even the northern lights. I never believed in aliens or UFOs until that very night. I just hope it never happens again. Well, that's an example of somebody that appears to be quite disturbed about the possibility that UFOs indeed are real, and maybe he saw an ET in there as well.
Well, it sounds like he did.
So not everybody are like Emily and her cousins, who seem to be very excited about the possibility of contacting ETs.
Remember, they're still young. Life's experiences will teach them otherwise.
Well, that often happens, doesn't it, unfortunately?
Yes, it does. And I think with that commentary, we need to wrap up the show. It's been an interesting one for sure, Larry. So I guess we need to say watch out not only for the flying saucers, but those little figures inside. We had several reports this week of things inside those flying saucers.
Right. Must be something in there.
Yes.
Okay, Jerry.
Okay, we'll wrap it up then. And, of course, we'll close out with your... I've already used my line, so it's just you.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jerry, keep your eyes to the skies.
And we'll write, but in your, if you're in the wilderness, don't walk off a cliff while you're looking up. Okay, my apologies to those people in Anchorage. We'll talk to you later.
I'm a spaceman.
Good night.
And I just got in from space. A spaceman.
Yeah,
I'm looking for the human race. A spaceman. I heard a whisper, it was here. I'm a spaceman.